Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. In Pennsylvania and around the country, voters don't choose their elected officials. Politicians choose their voters. The process that allows politicians to redraw district boundaries in their political favor is known as gerrymandering. And angry voters nationwide are demanding change. What will it take to end gerrymandering? And what's at stake? We'll talk about that and more with Stephen Zaret, a distinguished professor emeritus at Penn State and coordinator of the Center County branch of Fair Districts, Pennsylvania, and Debbie Trudeau, who describes herself as a musician, teacher, and nonpartisan rabble-rouser. She's also a member of the Center County leadership team for Fair Districts, Pennsylvania. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll begin with you, Stephen Zaret. What is gerrymandering, and why does it matter?
Well, let me begin with a quote. This is from former President Ronald Reagan, who said, "Political gerrymandering, the art of rigging the boundaries of congressional districts, is the greatest single blot on the integrity of our nation's electoral system, and it's high time we did something about it."
And gerrymandering has gotten a lot worse in the ensuing decades.
Actually, what's happened in the past 20 years is things have gotten much worse. We've always had gerrymandering. The term goes back to 1812. But computers and the ability to draw rigged maps that give an unfair advantage to one party over another has mushroomed in the past 20 years. And what we've seen is just enormous nationwide gerrymandering that, in effect, is undermining our democracy. It's bad for a number of reasons. One is it leads to extremism among our elected officials. We see that in Congress, where people won't compromise. They won't come together. They hold their extreme positions because they know they're not going to get defeated in the next election. They can say or do anything.
And so incumbents are often not worried about the other party. They're only worried about primary competitions.
That's right. And so they'll take an extreme position because they're worried about getting outflanked to the left or to the right of where they are. And they have no incentive to compromise. They have no incentive to listen to the wide cross-section of people in their district. They only have to show up, and they're going to get reelected.
Debbie Trudeau, as Steve just said, politicians on both sides do it. But according to David Daly, the author of a book whose title we can't say on radio, Rat Bleeped, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy, the Republicans took gerrymandering to a whole new level, and they have been especially effective in Pennsylvania. How does Pennsylvania compare with other states when it comes to gerrymandering?
We are the fifth worst in the nation. Maryland is also very bad on the Democratic side. Ohio is bad on the Republican side. Florida is terrible. North Carolina is terrible. That's our company.
Explain, if you would, Steve Zaret, why are federal and state legislative districts redrawn every 10 years to begin with?
It's mandated that we have, in the federal constitution, that we have a census every 10 years. And the idea is that the federal maps, the congressional maps, get redrawn to reflect changes in population. So if Pennsylvania gains population, we might gain a House seat. If we lose population and have lost some in the last decade, we will lose a congressional seat. So it's required that we do that every 10 years. And within the state, it's the same process. Population moves around in the state. And so the goal is to have districts that have equal populations within the state.
And in fact, the Supreme Court ruled in 1962, one person, one vote.
That's right.
The idea is that one district not be more powerful than another.
Yes, yes. The courts have never ruled, well, they have ruled on gerrymandering in some instances, like in some extreme cases in Florida a few years ago. But when a case went to the Supreme Court the last time in 2005, the court said gerrymandering is illegal. It really does violate that one person, one vote principle. But they had no metric in order to determine whether a district was gerrymandered or not.
So it's a matter of severity. And the question is, how do the courts determine if it's severe enough to rule against it?
Well, there are now metrics, and that has changed things. So that there's a metric done by law professor Nicholas Stephanopoulos and a public policy person, Eric McGee, called
the efficiency gap.
The efficiency gap, right. And this gives the courts a way of testing whether there's been gerrymandering. Without going into the mathematics of it, say the gap is 20%. It means that Party A got 20% more of the seats than they would have gotten given the proportion of voters they have in the state. So if you look at Pennsylvania, to be specific, in 2012, in the state House and Senate races, Pennsylvania Democrats got 51% of the vote, but 28% of the seats. That's gerrymandering. Now, I should say, and Debbie really said it, gerrymandering is a nonpartisan issue. The Republicans have done it better in recent years, but the Democrats have done it.
And as she mentioned, it's happened. The Democrats are good at doing this in places like Maryland and Illinois. The Republicans have had tremendous success in places like North Carolina and Pennsylvania. But I'd like to go back to Debbie Trudeau for a moment to ask this. You know, in his book on gerrymandering, David Daley talks about the strategy of packing and cracking districts. Explain how voters are packed and cracked.
Right. So in a place like a city like Philadelphia, which is a Democratic stronghold, the districts were drawn in such a way that a Democratic candidate there would get about 80% of the vote. So it was absolutely safe for the Democratic Party. And then in the outlying districts, it was drawn so that the Republicans would have only a slight majority, but they would win. They might win with 55% of the vote. So there would be one really strong Democratic district surrounded by four or five Republican districts.
And the idea, of course, is that you only need a couple of votes to win. So if you've got all of these excess votes, getting back to this efficiency gap, we're talking about wasted votes.
That's exactly right. And the more votes you're wasting, the more obvious it is that it's a gerrymandered and rigged district. State College area and the center region is a beautiful example of the technique of splitting, because the contiguous area of State College in the center region is divided among four different House legislative districts. My district is the 81st, and we are represented by Rich Irvin. This district starts in Ferguson Township and extends south through Huntington beyond to south of the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
The district lines are so bizarre that Old Main and Beaver Stadium are in different legislative districts.
Wow. That's mind-boggling. A moment ago, you mentioned the 7th Congressional District, and this is Philadelphia, which is often cited as one of the most extreme examples of gerrymandering, but it's not the only one. The 5th Congressional District is often described as looking like an octopus with tentacles.
Our 5th Congressional District, it's huge. It starts in State College and extends all the way into the northwest corner of the state up to Erie. And State College is this little cluster of more left-leaning voters surrounded by more conservative voters.
Steve Zaret, that doesn't exactly make sense. The Supreme Court said that our district should be, to the extent that it's possible, compact. So I want to talk a little bit about Pennsylvania's constitution, which outlines several important requirements when it comes to redrawing legislative lines. In fact, you say that our current legislative districts are a mockery of those rules.
Well, that's right. The Constitution prescribes that the districts be contiguous, that is, they can't be in two different places. That's why you get these distorted districts. There's this small link between two parts of them, like the 7th District. They need to be compact, and they need to not divide communities of interest. So the center region would be considered a community of interest, but we are divided between four state house districts. So our community, we might be doing better with one or two who represented us wholly, not represented us and pieces of all the surrounding areas.
So what's happening in Pennsylvania is happening nationwide. Voters are getting angry and frustrated with how they're being represented. And this has resulted in Centre County in the Fair Districts movement. Tell us a little bit about it and how you became involved in this.
I had realized that gerrymandering was an issue. And so when I read about a meeting that was being held in December by the state organization, Fair Districts PA, I went to it and liked what I heard and became active in the group. The group has grown phenomenally. We have about 280 people on our mailing list, and we are organizing events and doing what we need to do, which is educate the population in the county and the center region about the need to make changes in how we do things in Pennsylvania.
And I understand, Debbie Trudeau, that Fair Districts Movement in Centre County has created 3 action committees. So I'm kind of curious to know what your focus is going forward.
We have the legislative committee, and there are 3 of us. And actually, we picked up a 4th person so that we have somebody in each of the House districts to coordinate people to go and meet with their legislators, to write to them, call them, badger them. Let them know that we're out here and we're not happy. Several of us that live in Mr. Irvin's district met with him, and there were 6 of us jammed into a little room, and it was a very successful meeting. We were able to talk with him. He was a great listener. He asked us to give him talking points. We asked what was important to him. He said things like creating jobs. He didn't want to see the young people leaving the state. And all those things tie back to the feeling that in Pennsylvania, our legislature isn't listening to us. So if you want people to stay, be a more effective legislature. Another committee is involved in writing letters to the editor, written communication, drawing up templates that folks can use to communicate. The 3rd group is legislative, so we are more involved in setting up meetings and coordinating interested people to go and meet with their legislators directly.
And we're also available to send speakers to community groups to explain the importance of redistricting.
Because there is limited time and the amendment process is so slow that you really need to keep the pressure up.
Oh, absolutely. Not just this year, but through the next session as well.
You need to make these changes before the 2020 census.
Absolutely, because if we don't make it before 2020 or the redistricting in 2022, we'll have a gerrymandered map all over again. It may be the flip of this one, but it's not going to represent the voters of Pennsylvania.
There are actually 2 bills in Pennsylvania right now. Tell us about those bills and what it will take for one of them to pass.
There's Senate Bill 22 and House Bill 722, and both of them are nearly identical. What they have is a citizens commission that will be 4 people each from the 2 largest parties, currently Democratic and Republican, plus 3 more members who are not affiliated or independent, or the lesser parties. And those people would be selected based on a criteria that includes not being related to anybody in politics, lobbying, government, so as unaffiliated as it can possibly be.
So the idea is, rather than the interested political party redrawing the lines, you want this independent commission to draw the lines?
A citizens commission, yes. And when the job is done, they disband. So they would be given a specific timeline. A large number of people would be entered into a pool. The parties could reject a certain number. Secretary of the State, I believe, who oversees elections currently, would also be the overseer of that. But it would be the commission's job to do the work.
This sounds a little more challenging than it might be in a place like California, where they already have created a more impartial, a nonpartisan way of redrawing districts, because you have to get the politicians themselves to acknowledge that this is a problem and, in a way, vote against their own self-interest. Steve Zaret.
That's right. We need in Pennsylvania to pass redistricting bills twice and, in effect, modify the Constitution, and then we get an opportunity for people to vote.
Rather than a referendum
That's
on
right.
our ballots, which
That's
would
right.
be a much simpler way to do this.
And where there have been referendums, they have been overwhelmingly endorsed by the voters to do fair districting.
And that's whether you're in a red state, a blue state, or a purple state.
That's right. No one wants to be gerrymandered. And in red states, where the maps have been drawn for red state politicians, people find themselves cut off from their natural communities in blue districts where their votes are never going to count either.
Now, California created open primaries. The top 2 candidates, regardless of party, advance to the general election. And that seems to have made a difference in something you mentioned earlier, Steve Zaret, polarization, political polarization.
Yes. California is complicated because it is 2 referendums that pass simultaneously. And the system there has been working well. There have been analyses of them that show that the proportion of U.S. congressional seats matches exactly to the party preferences of the state. And there are analyses done by the Schwarzenegger Institute at University of Southern California that show that the candidates have moved toward the center, and there's much more cooperation in the House and Senate. The other thing that's one of the goals of ending gerrymandering is to take away some of the advantage that incumbents have. And there's been much more turnover in the last several years since these initiatives were implemented in California than there were in the previous decades.
And in fact, despite dismal approval ratings in the single digits, between the years 2002 and 2010, California held 265 congressional elections, and only one district changed party hands prior to this new way of redrawing districts.
That's the advantage of being in a gerrymandered state. You don't have to risk electoral defeat. And then you can say or do anything. You don't have to be responsive. You can take all sorts of crazy, extreme views and hold on to them because it doesn't matter.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guests are Stephen Zaret and Debbie Trudeau, the coordinator and leadership team member, respectively, of the Center County branch of Fair Districts, Pennsylvania. Every 10 years, based on U.S. Census data, states draw congressional and state legislative districts as part of the reapportionment process. The party in power draws up the new lines. When they do it in their political favor, that's known as gerrymandering. Back now to David Daley and his book, Rat Bleeped. He says there are often unintended consequences of gerrymandering, and one of them you just mentioned, the extremism we now see in politics. Daley says the Freedom Caucus is an example of how the Republican Party has lost control of its members, and he says that's a direct result of gerrymandering.
That's right. They have no incentive to compromise. In the old days, parties would get together and meet in the middle and draw up budgets. Foreign policy was always bipartisan. They would solve the nation's problems. During the Reagan administration, there was a landmark change in how Social Security was funded, which has sustained Social Security up to the present. These are things that make government work for everybody, and they do the things that people want. What we have now is elected officials who are impervious to public opinion. We also have a form of one state rule that's been evolving, where one party plays a dominant role in many of the states and in the federal government. And the kind of thing that gerrymandering involves is really not much different than the election stealing that occurred in the former Eastern Europe communist states, that occurs routinely in dictatorships throughout the world, where one party has all the power and doesn't have to face the electorate.
And remarkably, Debbie Trudeau, David Daley says that the United States is the only country in the world that allows politicians to draw the lines and effectively choose their voters.
That's right. Because of computer data, they can micromanage down to blocks. They know who's registered. They know who's voted recently. They can look at demographics and see who's likely to vote one way or another. All this data that they didn't used to have. And one of the things these two bills will do is prohibit using that data.
But as Steve Zaret said, constitutional amendments have to be passed in two consecutive legislative sessions, which is a slow process. And so I'm wondering, what can and should, in your opinion, concerned citizens do?
Let their legislators know how they feel about this. And they can write, they can email, they can phone call, they can go meet with the person directly. My understanding is that meeting directly is very effective. You can do demonstrations. I get conflicting reports about whether it's better to go to the Harrisburg office or go to the outlying offices. The Harrisburg staff generally know more about what's going on with the legislation in particular. The outlying areas tend to do more constituent services, so it's really overwhelming for them when 20 or 30 people show up with signs saying this is what we want.
Which, in fact, that's been happening.
Yes.
The steps of the Capitol just last week were basically overflowing with Pennsylvanians who say, I want to see this changed.
That's right. I think if this were to go to a referendum, if we had that kind of process, it would pass overwhelmingly. We have to let our legislators know that this is an important issue and that we will remember whether they come on as co-sponsors and whether they vote for these bills or if they refuse to. It needs to be the pressure of ordinary people who recognize that this isn't a Republican or a Democratic issue. It's an issue at the core of our democracy.
We have a lot of reason to be optimistic. The House bill that's come up has 87 co-sponsors out of the 203 legislators. So there's a lot of momentum building, and it's a very bipartisan group. And in the Senate bill, 13 of the 50 senators have co-sponsored already. So momentum is building, but we do need to keep the pressure on. Anybody that's sitting on the fence needs to be encouraged to lean one way or the other, hopefully towards the fair side.
You know, I said a moment ago that both parties, and you both said that both parties are guilty of gerrymandering. And we often hear people say, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And the reality is, Democrats have actually come up with their own version of this electronic way of redistricting, and it's called Advantage 2020.
And the Democrats intend to invest $70 million in it.
Meanwhile, the Republicans have announced a new Red Map 2020, and they're investing $125 million in it, which has me saying, you know, the temptation to game the system is enormous, and stopping it isn't going to be easy.
There you have the marriage of the two problems in American politics, money and gerrymandering. And it's wrong. It's not letting people choose their elected officials. It's creating a totally artificial system that distorts the public's will.
Well, speaking of money, Debbie Trudeau, what impact did the Supreme Court Citizens United decision have on all of this?
It's a tremendous impact. You know, if the legislators are not listening to us because our votes don't really matter, they're listening to the people writing the checks. And that concerns me greatly. That terrifies me, actually.
And dark money was involved in the red map districting. Tell us a little bit about that, because Pennsylvania was a target of so-called red mapping, which was really the brainchild of Karl Rove.
Yes, and the Republicans, to their credit, had the foresight to see that the 2010 state elections were very important. They put money in. It wasn't large by federal election standards, but they put money to give an advantage to elect a Republican-dominated House and Senate, even though Democrats overall were about equal to Republicans in the state. And then they drew the maps. And the maps have given them a large advantage. And we have a deadlocked government. We have, in the last couple of years, the legislature has had trouble putting together a budget, which the Democratic governor would approve. But they also can't agree among themselves and come to a compromise within the Republican caucus on some of the major issues like pension reform in Pennsylvania, or even selling off the state stores. And it's this paralysis that everybody complains about, and a lot of it has to do with gerrymandering.
You know, but it is interesting because in Pennsylvania, the governor can veto a redistricting plan that he or she thinks looks unfair.
Yes, that's right. And in 2012, there was a Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican governor. And under those circumstances, and that's the case in many of the gerrymandered states, Michigan, North Carolina, and so on, that allowed this to happen.
States have been waging lawsuits for three decades and have very, very little to show for them. So I'm just wondering how optimistic you are with the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court may be looking at the situations in North Carolina and Wisconsin.
What's different now is that the Wisconsin court case was decided both in the original decision and in an appellate court based on the voter efficiency metric. So there is a metric. The justices in 2005 ruled that gerrymandering was illegal, but they had no way of determining if a district was gerrymandered or not. They now have a metric that they could use and say, this is gerrymandered and this isn't. And so I'm optimistic that the courts will rule in support of the lower court decisions to invalidate the districts in those two states. And if that's the case, it would be a relatively shorter step in Pennsylvania to get new districts drawn. But I think we have to move ahead anyway.
There's also a professor at Temple University who is training mathematicians to be able to testify about gerrymandering and the math involved to support this new metric.
Yeah, her name's Moon Duchin, actually at Tufts in the mathematics department.
Excuse
She's
me.
A geometry professor who can draw perfectly compact districts. There are a number of ways this can be done in a fair and unbiased ways. There's a computer programmer in Boston named Brian Olson,
who did a TED Talk about this.
That's right. And he uses census tracts. So you're not dividing communities, but you're still able to produce a compact district that isn't distorted to bring in more of one type of person or bring in fewer of another type of person.
And not cutting up the district based on how you voted in the past and how you're likely to vote in the future.
That's right.
So what's at stake? If we do nothing, Stephen Zerrett, what do you think is at risk here?
I really feel this is a fundamental threat to our democracy, that we'll have one-party rule in most, if not all, of the states, and continue to have increasing acrimony and deadlock at the federal level. Plus, I think it'll undermine the credibility of the government. The Congress is not representative. Certainly, the House of Representatives does not represent the way people voted nationally at the present time. And they don't represent the views that most people in America hold. So that's going to undercut the credibility of the government.
Debbie Trudeau, how can people become involved in Fair Districts Pennsylvania Center County chapter or chapters outside of Center County?
Well, the League of Women Voters is involved with this. They're our parent organization. There is a website, Fair Districts, PA, all one word. If you go there, you can sign up and get on the mailing list and explore all the various information there and see how you would like to participate. We'll lead you to certain local chapters like our own here in Center County, or you can be more involved statewide. We're based in Center County, but our districts expand way beyond that. So using Irvin's district as an example, because it's my neighborhood, we are at the very northern tip, and the southern edge of it is south of the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
You know how interesting that we probably live within just a couple of miles from each other, and we all have different state representatives.
Right, which is part of the problem. We are a beautiful example of splitting or cracking. Our fairly liberal area is split into districts that are mostly Republican, and the legislators seem to think it's great because we have four legislators representing our area, and in fact, it's the opposite. It's not a good situation.
How optimistic are you, Stephen Zerrett, that organizations like Fair Districts Pennsylvania can really create the change we want in Pennsylvania?
There's been tremendous growth of interest in this area and tremendous growth of the number of people affiliated with Fair Districts PA. And so I am optimistic that we can convince our legislators to do the right things. I think Debbie was talking about Representative Irvin. He hadn't considered the issue. When Debbie and her group sat down and talked with him, he thought, yes, this makes a lot of sense. This is the right thing to do. And even though it doesn't coincide with what may be his best political interests, he wants to do the right thing.
You know, but I'm thinking of Monroe County Republican Senator Mario Scavello, who is the co-sponsor of the bipartisan Senate bill. And he says the amendment is good policy, but he notes that even if it doesn't pass, the public push to stop gerrymandering might do some good on its own. Is that enough?
I don't think so.
Okay. So one of the reasons that the Republican legislators have more incentive this time around is because right now there's the Democratic and Republican leader of the House and the Democratic and Republican leader of the Senate, plus a fifth person decide the lines. The fifth person is almost always chosen by the Supreme Court, and right now the Supreme Court is Democratic. So it's likely to flip Democratic this time around after the census if nothing changes. So the Republicans have a little more motivation to come to the table about this.
All right. Well, we hope that your efforts are successful. Thank you both so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Stephen Zerrett, coordinator of the Center County branch of Fair Districts PA, and Debbie Trudeau, a member of the Center County leadership team. To find out more about efforts to end gerrymandering in Pennsylvania and to see illustrations of just how gerrymandered Pennsylvania's 5th and 7th congressional districts are, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.